Hey.
Here, at the very, very, very last word on the last line of Kaf Chet Omid Beis, Tanu Rabbanan. Now the top of Kaf Chet Omid Aleph. Mevatlin Talmud Torah lehotzaat hamet lachnasat kalah. In order to bury the dead or to bring in the bride, you have bittul Torah. You leave the Beis Medrash. Even though, you know, you go to a wedding, so you're supposed to bring like a little mishnayis. I think they say that like Rav Moshe used to, like Rav Moshe like was always going through shas. You know, be'i, not daf yomi. But he had a different cycle of learning that he undertook, you know, at weddings or bar mitzvahs or if he had to go to a dinner or, you know, any type of thing that you'd be obligated to attend. And he would learn, you know, whatever it was on that cycle. That was his learning, you know, while sitting there during the speeches or whatever it was. But a wedding can be a lot of bittul Torah. It was long.
Yeah, but one of the more important mitzvahs is the Sameach et Hachatan v'Kalah.
And I'm eating the meal.
Yeah.
No. So
the point is that for Achnasat Kalah and Levaya, you leave the Beis Medrash. And in principle, the default is that you never leave the Beis Medrash. But there are certain things that you leave the Beis Medrash for. Amru alav Rabbi Yehuda bar Eloi, Shayim Mevatel Talmud Torah lehotzaat hamet, lachnasat kalah. What's odd about that statement?
Acting like it's Amru alav, like it was something special, like they said before.
The Braisa says the halacha is you leave the Beis Medrash for hotzaat hamet and lachnasat kalah. What does it mean, hotzaat hamet? Why did you use the term hotza'at hamet?
I don't know.
No, because
normally
you're
living out of this world.
No.
Well, why not just say levayat hamet, which is the most.
You're interrupting the Torah study not for the Yehudis, when you have to take it from the Beit HaHesed to the Kever.
Yeah.
And then you need a minyan at the Kever. So that's where, I would think that's where the Hotzaat HaMet will come from.
I assume it's a more simple literary element. Hotzaat HaMet and Hachnasat HaKala. Anyway, but the point is that there's something strange here. And there was Tanu Rabbanan, this is the halacha. Amru alav, and this chacham, he did the halacha. It's very strange. We don't usually see that. What might it be coming to teach us? One step further what?
Either, like, you would leave the Beis Medrash, but you wouldn't leave the Torah studies, or like, he would still be reviewing his head, or he'd be leaving the Beis Medrash, but he would take an actual physical.
No. It says Hayam Mevatel Talmud Torah. He stopped his learning.
Hey, there's stories about the Golem that, you know, in the fetal position, when they passed by where they were, they would go outside and a few minutes. Not necessarily go to the cemetery, but they would cover to the mat.
In other words, this kind of halakha, you might say, Hava Amina, what does it mean? Who has to go out to do the Levaya Sameis? Every time there's a funeral in town, you have to go?
Amina.
You know Saul Lieberman? Mm-hmm. He died in the 3 in the morning. He lives in Deco, but he died in the 3 in the morning. Not the Saul Lieberman you might have been thinking of.
I'm sure he never had to.
Yes. There was a shiva on the block a couple of weeks ago. So I went for shachris, he was there. They went back for mincha, he was there. They went back for shachris the next day, he was there. I said to him, Saul, I didn't know that you were so friendly with this fellow that's sitting shiva. He said, the truth is I'm not. But I always go to shiva minyanim. No. He says, when I sat Shiva for my father, we were hard pressed the whole week to make a minyan every single, I think he sat Shiva for his father in the chutzlot. He said, you know, it was in the winter, mincha was at 4 in the afternoon, we were hard pressed to get a minyan. Then if I see there's a shiva minion, I go. I try to help out. All right? It's a great mita. He says, look, I'm Roshul anyway. So what's the difference? What's the feeling? At the same time, I go help out at a shiva minion. He's thought a long time there should be like a Google Doc in Efrat for all the shiva minyanim, or a website of all the shiva minyanim.
Make sure
that you always get a shiva. Yeah, it's a terrible thing. You have to start calling people. You have to. So. Right. Well, look. To make a lasagna is sometimes different than having to commit to be at a certain place at a certain time. And again, particularly in the middle of the winter when mincha is very early, before most anybody works in Yerushalayim, it's always before you get home. So you might say, look, there is a halacha. You have to. Somebody has to go to be malavah the maid. Everybody has to go? Clearly not. Every time you see on the Efrat list there's a funeral, there's somebody that you don't know or hardly know, you're obligated to go? Presumably not. So Rabbi Yehuda Bar Eloi could have said, look, this halacha, the Mevatel Talmud Torah, who's that talking about?
The family, the friends.
The family, the friends, the close people, the whatever it is, or the people who we were talking about Mittelnacht. So who are the people that go to the movies on Mittelnacht? The people that don't have night seder the other 364 nights of the year, and they go to the movie on Mittelnacht. They say, oh, hinei nimuchar muzum in the kaya mitzvahs Mittelnacht, right? So Christmas Eve.
Okay.
So
I never heard it called that.
That's what Yiddish is called. So you might say, if you're a Yehuda Bar Eloi, right, who's never like misses a moment of Torah, like even, we were talking before about what you learn in the bathroom. So you say, the halacha doesn't apply to me. No! The point of bringing the maisa, that Tanu Rabbanan, there's a halacha. Maaseh Shehaya, that this great rabbi did the halacha. Because you might have thought, you have a mina that halacha is for amcha.
Is there some deficit somewhere to this halacha about, not even, forget about Bitul Torah for a second, just in general. You have this halacha, it's great, it's a really important mitzvah of halacha to make, and also from Chakavana. But without any garish, you could have a scenario where nobody comes to a wedding or nobody comes to a funeral. So how does the halacha, is there any...
As you know from having looked ahead in the Gemara, this is exactly the question the Gemara is going to get to.
Well, they're mentioning reviewed by life. Mm-hmm. You can deduce from that maybe his contemporary didn't do this.
Maybe. So the Gemara asks, "B'mad dvarim amurim, b'she'en sham kol tzorcho." When you don't have a full complement of attendees, then you have to be mevatel Talmud Torah. But if the funeral is going to be so, look, sometimes I remember when I was a kid, meaning a teenager. The rabbi, look, I went to a shul, as I've said many times, I went to a shul that was, an Orthodox shul that was full of almost exclusively non-Orthodox people. And regardless of who was a member on the shul roster, those people didn't show up, aside maybe Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. People would die. The old people would die. I went to shul 3 times a day. Right? And these are people I never saw, I never knew. But they were members of the shul. They would die, the rabbi would have to go and conduct the service. And they'd have, it'd be graveside. Right? Meaning these were people who died without big families, without big whatever. Graveside service. And the rabbi would always be struggling to get a minion. Right? And these people, let's say they had 2 kids. Right? A son and a daughter. And the son married a shiksa. And so how many yidden are you going to have at this... at this graveside service. So the rabbi is always struggling to get a minion to come out so that you can say Kaddish, because the ikker of the kvura, right? If you could leave the guy by the side of the road and still say Kaddish, that would still be fine, right? Because people think the ikker is the Kaddish, right? So he would say, look, you have to come, you call me up and say, look, I'm going to pick you up, we have to come out to the, go up to the cemetery in Newark. You know when you land in Newark, there's that Anheuser-Busch brewery. There's a big Anheuser-Busch, you know, Budweiser brewery right next to the Newark Airport. Behind it is a big old Jewish cemetery. I'm sure many of my ancestors are buried there. Right? So right there, and they have this big neon, you know, the Anheuser-Busch logo with the eagle. I don't know. But, oh yeah? Is Budweiser still a best-selling beer in America?
Yes.
Even though people are now into these kinds of, like...
Yeah, it's
Budweiser. So, but if you have a Kol Tzarcho, like another, like Mordechai's Levaya a couple weeks ago, you couldn't fit another body in the room. Right? In other words, if any one of us had not gone to the Levaya, I mean, you could say, Lo Mala Velo Mori. Nobody would know the difference. But you have 10 people about it. Okay, so you say, when do you have to be in Vatal Talmud Torah? We're having an extra person as Mashmuti.
But again, that's sort of about my question. Is there a Hefza Gavra kind of issue about this? Like, do you ever, outside of family members, I mean, maybe like your job or something, do you have like, should you, is there some obligation to go if you, or environment or something to go even if you don't have a direct?
Well, maybe.
Yeah, I sometimes it must be. How do you know?
I mean, it's interesting. This conversation.
Like smartphones, so to be able to say, "Oh, we have a minute." How do we know exactly what's the smartphone?
As you know from looking ahead, the Gemara is going to ask this precise question.
At the window, you see like if there's three people walking.
Aval yesh sham kol tzarcho ein mevatlin. But if they have a sufficient representation, so then you shouldn't leave the Beis Medrash. Vekama kol tzarcho. Now listen very carefully to what the Gemara says. Tell me what you think the tone of voice of the Gemara is here, the narrator is here. Vekama kol tzarcho. Omar of Shmuel Barini. Mishmei de Rav. Tresar alfe gavre. Veshita alfe shipure. 12,000 men and 6,000 chauffeur blowers. So how many people do you have to have in attendance before you can say, you know what, it really makes no difference whether I'm there or not, so I really shouldn't be Mevatel Talmud Torah? 18,000 people, a third of whom are blowing shofar. But if there's 17,999, you don't have a justification to sit with your Gemara in the Beis Medrash.
Or if there's 18,000 people, but there's not one-third of them blowing shofar.
And then here's a kula. You want to hear a kula? Everybody likes a kula. Here's the kula, right? Va'omre lo, and some say tresar elif gavre uminaihu shita alfe shipure. 12,000 people, of whom half of them, 6,000, are shofar blowers. Meaning the shofar blowers are included in the 12,000. Yes, out of 12,000 people. Now, what does the Gemara mean when it says you need to have 12,000 or 18,000 people at the funeral before you can take the...
No numbers, really.
Yeah. How many people do you think lived in Sura or in Pumbedita or in any city in the Galil?
11,500.
I tried looking around today to find population statistics for the ancient world. I mean, there were some cities, you know, like in the year 500, around the year that the Gemara was completed, this is before that. So in Rome, there were like 400,000 people. But Sur and Pumbedita were not Rome. And the Jewish population was only a portion of the overall population. And the male population was, at most, only half of that. So the Gemara says... Yes, you don't have to feel obligated as long as the funeral is well attended. And how well attended does it have to be? 18,000 people. What's it saying?
Go.
Saying go. Right? It's saying, don't look for a chokhmah. Don't look for an excuse to say, what the rush of me. This is true for weddings as well as for funerals. Except what? The Gemara is not concerned with the weddings. Why? Because people go to the wedding. Why? You get a reva off. They don't serve food at the funeral. You serve food, the Yidden will come.
You can invite them to the wedding.
Yes, it's true.
No,
although in the old world, as your invitation to the wedding, the hachnasat kala has nothing to do with chicken or beef.
But it would be strange for me to show up to show up at somebody's wedding if I'm doing hachnasat kala.
No,
I'm invited.
No. Didn't you ever see Fiddler? Kakatuv? On Fiddler. Hachnasat kala was you went to the chuppah. Right, and as you were part of the parade that went from the bride's house to the chuppah, which was in the town square or wherever it was, and then what we call the wedding, which is, you know, the food. That was just the mishpacha. The wedding meal was more akin to what we call a sheva bracha. Right, that's why it was very common. People got married on Friday. Now it's again popular that people getting
married
on Friday.
Got
married on Friday afternoon. And then the wedding feast was Friday night dinner for the mishpacha and for a couple of close friends. Because anyway, you were having Friday night dinner.
But
right?
The question is, sorry, what about a coin? Does he still have to be the battle in Talmud to go to the funeral because he can't go to the Beit HaKadosh?
Yes.
Anyway.
In other words, if he can't go to the Beit HaKadosh, this is nothing to do with the Beit HaKadosh. Look at Rashi. What does Rashi say? No. Rashi says the Hachnasat Kala. Hachnasat Kala lilavta. So Hotza'at Hamet is presumably the same thing. Without becoming Tamei, to escort the deceased from his last repose to the gates of the cemetery beyond which the Kohen cannot pass, there's a kiyum of Kavod HaTov. So that's the point, I think David's right, that's the point of the Gemara. That, yes, it's true that if there are enough people in attendance and you are a regular Torah learner, you can say, I'm not obligated. But how many people is that? So the Gemara sets the bar so high. In other words, the principle is preserved. And it's what's the theme here? There's a tension between the global commitment to Talmud Torah, which comes before everything else. And the reality that sometimes that absolute commitment has to bend to other things. Those questions about what do you learn in the bathroom are motivated by this fact that, well, you know, we have not yet figured out a way that people don't have to go to the bathroom. Right? So that's the kind of... You know, it's a story I tell about Rabbi Brovender. When I got to Brovender's, I got really into the learning. So that you like to learn. I mean, it's amazing how much, you know, when you're young, you have energy, and you don't have to sleep as much as you do now, and, you know, and you're in the kind of hostage environment of yeshiva, where, like, you know, you go to lunch and you eat really quick because you want to get back to the base medrash, because there's just not enough hours in the day. And you get up early, and you have a chavrusa an hour before davening, because there's just not enough hours in the day. And yeah, somehow I manage. But you know, like even you start thinking, like you know, you have to go over shtayim mikra vechatargam during chazar zeshat, because chazar zeshat is like a bittel Torah, right? You know, you can go over the shtayim mikra vechatargam. There's no limit to the to what a yeshiva guy can think. So I remember that year I was reading the Ish Halacha. So you read Ish Halacha. So Ish Halacha is like Torah. It's not exactly like learning Gemara. But it's Torah. It's not like reading Time magazine. Or worse. So you read Ish Halacha on the first page of the Halachic Man, the Rav talks about ontology. So you don't know what ontology is. So you have to go. So you're learning in Brovender's. So there's a dictionary. There was a dictionary. There was an Oxford dictionary, and there was also like that one volume, that fat Stanford Encyclopedia of Philosophy. So you can go look these things up. So when you're learning the Ish Halacha by Rabbi Soloveitchik Zecher Tzadik Livracha, he was still alive at the time. So the Talmud Torah meter is running. Maybe it's running, you know, like when you're in the cab. Like when the cab is like zooming down Kvish Mispar Echad, the Monet is running. And when you're stuck in traffic, it's running, but it's just moving slower. Right? So when you're learning Gemara, the meter is really running, the Talmud Torah meter. When you're like learning Ish Halacha, it's running, but maybe it's slightly slower. But what happens when you go to look up the word ontology in the dictionary? I mean, is it running? Is it not running? Is it running just very, very slowly? Is it...
Okay,
so
by yoga
you're giving me an answer. I'm giving you the question.
Okay.
So you go and you ask the Rosh Hashiva. And he says, "Facts, don't worry. One day you'll grow up." And I didn't understand what he meant. Now I think I do understand what he means. But you know, but that point that you know, you live in a world where your full commitment is to Torah study, but yet there are that full commitment is always going to come into conflict with other obligations, right? You have to go to the bathroom, you have to daven, right?
At the table,
you have to eat, you have to do things towards Shalom Bayit, you have to do things towards Chinuch Bonim, you have to do things towards Parnosa, you have to, right? So in other words, that's what the Gemara is. That's what the Gemara is
doing. About
what?
Like if you're in the middle of your work, if you have the same obligation for all that
The Gemara does not address that question. Like how much hefsed would you have to bear in order to say I don't have to go to that funeral? And if taking off the day from work to go to the funeral means hefsed parnasa, which was in the ancient world, that was by definition. Everybody was a people didn't have maskorot to, and with a certain number of days off you could take. Ula amar kigon de chaitse gavre mi'abula ad sikra. So Ula gives a different definition of how many people you need in order to be able to say, I'm not obligated. It's not an absolute number, it's a relative number. Enough people so that the path from the city gate until the cemetery being usually out of the city, is full. There's a whole parade of people. Right? How many people is that? Probably even more. Right, Nez, what would it mean? Okay, let's take our example. Right? Kfar Etzion is the closest yeshuv to the local cemetery. You would have to have the whole road full from the entrance to Kfar Etzion to the entrance of the cemetery. Is that more than 12,000 people?
Easily.
Yeah. What?
Depends how close they count.
Okay, let's say even single file. Would it be greater than the whole population of Kfar Etzion? If all of Kfar Etzion lined up in single file from the entrance...
300 people in the hurricane.
Right? So, in other words, it's this outrageous number. Rav Sheshe Samar, kenetinata kach netilata. The way it was given is the way it is given back. Ma netina, what are we talking about? What's the antecedent here? It's Torah. Ma netinata b'shishim ribo. Just as the Torah was given in the presence of 600,000, when you're burying a Talmud Chacham, and it's that idea, you need 12,000 or 18,000 with all the shofrot, or you need people lined up from city gate to cemetery gate, that's talking about for regular deed. But when it's a Talmud Chacham who is the embodiment of the Torah himself, when you're giving him back, so you need to have 600,000. There was no city in the ancient world that had 600,000 people in it.
That's a good connection between the 600,000 and the Matan Torah.
What?
But each person that was there got the Torah. It happened to be 600,000.
So as you know from reading on in the Gemara, I see everybody prepared tonight. That's the next line. Hanimili lemandakore vetone. That's somebody who learned Tanakh and Mishnah. Aval lemandematne late leshura. But for somebody who taught Torah, now, who's the Torah that's going back? Who's the embodiment of the Torah that's being buried and needs at least 600,000? Somebody who learned Torah shebichtav and Torah shebal peh. But somebody who taught Torah, ein la davar sof. Meaning nobody has a right to. Nobody has a right to stay at home.
Well, certainly, if you're learning anyway, you might have nothing. You can find some reason to say, well, look, you can't. But you can't say you're like it's more important to learn Torah than to honor the Torah. So for those people.
Precisely.
Somebody who taught Torah in Torah. Like a call for performance. Like, if I learn something, could I keep it to myself when I'm gone, whatever I want to come? But if I learn something and I pass it on to somebody, then it keeps going and going and going.
Right. It is a multiplier effect. Right. That's a good insight. That's a very good insight. I'm very quick to tell you when you say something wrong, so I'll be mode. That's a very good insight.
Nothing.
Tanya Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai Omer, Bo'u re kama chavivin Yisrael lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, shebechol makom shegala shechina imahen. Now the Gemara takes a kind of different turn. How beloved are the Jewish people, that wherever they go out into the diaspora, the Shechina goes with them. Kalula Mitzrayim Shechina imahen, shneemar, Pasuk in Shmuel Aleph, Hanigla Nigleti Levet Avicha Biyotam B'Mitzrayim. Right? God says that I was also exiled to Mitzrayim when the Jews were there. Kalula Bavel, Shechina Mehem, Shneemar Lema'anchem Shalachti Bavela. V'af Keshein Atidin Li Goel Shechina Mehem. And in the future, when the Yidden will be redeemed, the Shechina will be redeemed. Shneemar V'shav Hashem Elokecha Et Shvutecha Veshiv. Veshiv lo ne'emar, ela veshav. But it doesn't say that he returned them, or he brought them back. It says he God, returned. Milamed shakadosh baruch hu shavim ahim. When we'll come back from the Golis, kadosh baruch hu will come back from the Golis. Bibena galiyot. Bibavet. Hecha omar, abaye bevei kenishta dehutzal. Oh, hecha. So if the Shechina is in Galut now, where in Galut is the Shechina? It's an interesting idea. When we talk about God, the Shechina being in exile, what do we assume?
Everywhere.
He's everywhere. But no, the Gemara says, like, he must be someplace. Like, you went to Chutz La'aretz? Ever? I'm sorry. I don't mention that to embarrass you. Yeah. No, but Pesach, the Tshuva, you came out of the air. It's also to go to Chutz La'aretz. I mean, maybe I'd have there. So, like, but if you have to go to Chutz La'aretz, like a Chmonis, if you have to go to Chutz La'aretz, so there's better places to go than others. So, like, where's the Kaddish Baruch Hu? Like, New York is pretty nice.
Vegas. Anywhere you let him in.
Vegas.
Cool. Vegas has a very small city.
That's Chabad.
Wherever you let him in.
Yes. That's like we remember hearing that at like Shal Shudas when we were kids. So the Amoraim like debate like where in Akadosh, where in, you know, it's like the story about the Mashiach. Right.
He's sitting at the poor people in.
Yes, like where's Mashiach, and is Mashiach coming any second? That means he's in the world right now. Right. So if Mashiach come this second, so where is he the second before he comes? Gemara says he's in Rome, sitting in the Shari Romi, with all the lepers and all the schnorrers and all the schleppers and all the whatever. He's like with the lowest of the low. Right? Why Rome is like the capital. When that Agadah is formulated, Rome is the capital of Galut. It would be the equivalent today of saying he's in Times Square. Well, Times Square now is like Disneyland. But Times Square... Maybe. Agnon has a story that Eliyahu Hanavi comes No, I'm sorry. It's two brothers. One's a chassid, one's a misnagid. And they're arguing, Mashiach Hiltkimin, when Mashiach comes, and of course, when Mashiach comes, he's going to come to our little shtetl in Galicia. Where is he going to daven? So the Misnagid says, of course, Betach is going to come. He's going to daven in the Letzim Shluchel, right? In the Chassidish Shtivel, right? Of course he's going to come daven by the Misnagdim, right? And the Chassid says, no. He's definitely going to come to us. Why? He goes to you. Eliyahu HaNavi is going to show up. I'm sorry, not Mashiach. Eliyahu HaNavi is going to show up to you. What are you going to do to him? Eliyahu HaNavi, you know, like he's been flying around the whole world. He shows up in your shul. What are you going to say to him? Oh, Eliyahu HaNavi. This teiku. Right? What's the answer? This toistress. What does it mean? He'll come to us. He's tired. He's hungry. What's he going to find by us? A schnapps. Piece of kugel. Piece of herring. Right? Where do you think, honestly, Eliyahu HaNavi shows up, where do you think he's going to want to go first? So, Abaye says that the Shechina is hanging out in Bevei Kenishta de Hutza. Hutza is a place in Bavel. Ubevei Kenishta de Shaf V'yativ B'Nahardo. In the, what we'd call the Churva. You know what the Churva is? The Churva is the shul that was destroyed and rebuilt. Right? The Shaf V'yativ, that was taken down and put back up, resettled. In other words, he splits his time between the shul in Hutzal and this Beit Knesset HaChurva in Nahardo. V'lo tema, hacha v'hacha. Right? Don't say that he's in both places at once, or she's in both places at once. Ella, zimnin hacha, v'zimnin hacha. Sometimes he's here, sometimes he's there. Like, it's nice. Like, can you imagine, like, today you'd say, like, he's, where is he? So, you know, to go back to the Agnon story, you could say, like, he's, you know, sometimes he davens by the Hasidim, sometimes he davens by the Misnagdim. Sometimes he davens in his yeshiva, sometimes he davens in his yeshiva. Omar Abaye, titi li, dechi, marchikna, parsa, hayalna, umatsilna, hatam. So Abaye says, you should give me my reward, I should be rewarded, because whenever I was, you know, less than a parsa away, I would go up and daven there myself.
Which one?
It doesn't say. I assume the one in Nahardo. Abu de Shmuel, the Levi, havu yotve bekenishta de shaf yotve b'Nahardo. Abu de Shmuel was sitting, or Abu de Shmuel and Levi were sitting in this churva shul in Nahardo. At Yeshchina, Shamu Kol Rigsha, and they heard the Shechina. In other words, there was this tradition in this shul that's where the Shechina was hanging out. Well, you can imagine that, like, you know, like there's some shul in Long Island, some big fancy shul they build, right? I was in Toronto last year at that, what's that called, the Bayit? This huge shul, it's got like 100,000 things going on. I spoke in this shul. They had, it's like a shtibul. I mean, it's a shtibul in the sense it's like a minion factory, right? They have like mariv like every hour and a half hour. It's like, you know, like the movies, you know. Hello, you'd like to daven mariv, you know, press 1, right? Mariv is davening at 5 o'clock, at 5:30, at 6, at 6:30, right? So they have this minion factory going on. There was a wedding going on in the building while I was giving a shiur elsewhere in the building, and I was completely unaware that this was going... Like, imagine, like, you know, there are nights where we have the shiur in here, and there's a bar mitzvah going on in the next room. It's a balagan. There was a whole wedding going on. I was giving a shiur. No, I was, you know, you're right.
He didn't know.
No, he was giving a shiur about this tomorrow, and then, like, he was stopped, and he only got up.
So like this is a shul. It's like a little bit of b'tzedek. It has pride in what they do. It's called the Bayit in Toronto. It's this huge, like it's like the equivalent. You know, like they hear about talking about these mega churches in America. No, it's a wonder. I'm not critiquing. It's a wonderful community. It's a wonderful shul, but it's got a lot of. So you can imagine they've got some pride.
They have small schools around it too.
So you can imagine. You can imagine they think if the Shechina has to be somewhere in Golus, Rachman is the Shechina. The Shechina begaluta. So wouldn't you think the Shechina would want to be in that shul instead of some other place?
By the way, you just reminded me I have to call Rabbi Bitterman.
So go.
Rabbi
so
right next to the shul.
So Abud, Shmuel, and Levi are in this shul in Narda, and they hear a voice. What, like, what's happening? Right? You know, like, you hear the creaky old building. Like, when you were kids, you'd say you heard a ghost. No, when they hear the creaky old building, they know it's the Shechina. Kamu v'nafku, Rav Sheshes have... So they get up and they run away. Rav Sheshes have a yotiv b'vei kenishtu d'shat v'yotiv b'in Narda. Atya Shechina v'lo nafuk. He heard the Shechina knocking around, and he didn't run away. Atu malachei sharet v'kam ibatu lei amar lefanav rebona shel olam aluv v'sheino aluv mi nidchem mipnei mi. It's like, why should I leave for you? And as I'm here in shul, what does a Jew do? Where's a Jew supposed to be? He's supposed to be in shul. He's supposed to be davening, supposed to be learning. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes and says, this is fun, I don't have to leave. Because I'm where I'm supposed to be. Me Amar Lo.
I'm missing something.
Yeah?
Why hearing the Shechina would they leave? Why would...
They were like a little...
No.
A little frightened.
No, maybe because he saw the Shechina came, so they went home to put on the Shabbos clothes and to get ready for the Shechina.
No. In other words, they're aware that the Shechina is in Galut. The presence of the Shechina in Galut is a sign that we're in Galut. Right? It's not, they don't hear the Shofar Shel Mashiach. Right? Adirabba, to see the presence of the Shechina in Galut is something of a reminder that we're really stuck here deep.
The point about the example that he was blind. He was like,
Rav Sheshes was blind, that's correct. So it's even more. Rashi also points. Rashi reminds us also that Rav Sheshes is blind.
I guess I'm missing something. I understand the fear, but if you're at Shemayim, where what's the extra fear of the Shechina?
You should always have a little Yirat Shemayim.
No, assuming you have a proper Yirat Shemayim.
As you pointed before, marry and turn away kind of thing.
What?
As you pointed before, marry and turn away.
No,
but he's already blind.
Narim, don't look.
Yeah, but don't look, he'll go blind, but he's already blind. Right. He's not the new one. He's the one who's not afraid. Fair enough.
Then the Gemara reminds us, Ve'eyelahem le'mikdash ma'at. When Yecheskel says that in the Galut, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be a mini-mikdash. And we used to have Beit HaMikdash. Beit HaMikdash was the meeting place between Bnei Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But now we don't have Beit HaMikdash. Now we're in Galut. Where are we going to meet up with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? In the Bate Knesset of Bate Midrash. They serve as the miniature mikdash for the encounter with God. Omer of Yitzchak, Elu Bate Knesiot, Bate Midrashot, Sheba Bavel. I mean, why Bavel?
Well, I was wondering, maybe there's a polemic against, this might be an anachronism, but, they actually had, like, mikdashim in Egypt. Like, an actual mikdash.
Yeah.
And maybe they're saying, like, that, you don't actually have to build an extra baby dash. A baby dash. You can actually even, a baby dash in Bavel is better than the actual place where they're bringing, Karbanot in.
No, because it's very clear that it's the Mikdash Ma'at.
Right, the same, but it was, but why did we put it in Bavel instead of saying,
it is in Bavel.
The Seder, but you're saying why?
No, Bavel here is what's that word, a synecdoche?
Yeah.
Bavel here is a synecdoche for Galut.
Although there's times when people question whether, when they mention certain things about Bavel, if it means specifically Bavel, about, you should make a life in Bavel, and everything, but...
Here I mean it to be a, you know what you mean by that, a synecdoche? Where if you take a word and it means, and then if I say Wall Street is corrupt,
Madison Avenue.
But what do I mean by Madison Avenue? By Madison Avenue, I mean the advertising industry, which not all of whom have their offices on Madison Avenue. right? Washington, right? Meaning the federal government, which is headquartered in Washington, but is not exclusively in Washington. Rabbi Elazar Amar, Ze Beit Rabbeinu Shebebavel. Darish Rava, Mai Dichtiv Hashem On Ata Haita Lanu, Elu Bate Knesset Bate Midrashot. Omar Abaye, Miresh Ave Garisna Beveta Umatsilna Bevekanishta. Originally, I used to learn Garisna, to read. I would learn at home, and I would go to shul to David. Kevan Deshmoit Laha, the Ka'omar David, Hashem Ahavti Ma'on Beitecha, how much I love residing in your home, God, Havagasina Bebekanishta. So I would go and learn in shul. In other words, like Talmud Torah, does it matter where you do it? You could do it on the bus. Right? In other words, you can learn at home, but it's better to learn in shul. There's like a value to that. What could possibly be the value of learning in shul versus learning at home? Well, I guess it depends on what's going on in your home. There used to be in the old days in the neighborhood before we were so well established in the old days. Remember, we sometimes used to have trouble getting a minyan for Maariv in the caravans. So there was a chavrusa in the neighborhood. There were two guys from the shul who used to have a chavrusa, and they learned, I think, every night together to learn Gemara. But they used to learn at home, and then they would come for Maariv. I once told one of them, I thought, we're not learning the shul. And if you learn in the shul, you and I used to learn together. Right? We used to learn in the shul. And even though most of the time we sat there by ourselves in the caravan before Maariv. Right? But there's value to having people in the community. But there's value to making it visible. Right? In other words, generally we say it's not so good to publicize your mitzvot. Right? You should have a little tznius. Except if it has the potential to
get others to do it.
Inspire others in order to create a kind of atmosphere. Really, people see there's a base medrash in the neighborhood and it's lights out. So what does that say about the neighborhood? Even if everybody should be learning in their home. But what does it say about the neighborhood that it's not visible? Tanya Rabbi Elazar HaKapar Omer Atidin Bate. So these synagogues and study halls in Bavel, in Chutz Laaretz, wherever they are, Atidin batei knesiot ubatei midrashot shebabavel sheyikpu be'eretz Yisrael, shneemar ki ketavor beharim ukechermel beyam yavo v'alod varim kal v'chomer matavor v'karmel shelo ba'u elo lefi sha'a lilmod Torah. As the midrash says that at the time of Matan Torah, there was this kind of like competition between all the mountains, and when Har Sinai wins the contest to be the location of Hitkalut, all the other mountains, right? What do we say in Hallel? About the mountains? Right, as the mountains themselves came galloping along, right, as if you could uproot the mountain, right? And of course the idea that Har Sinai itself is uprooted and held upside down, right? So just like the mountains could have skipped along from wherever they were in order to be present at Har Sinai, so in the future, the Batei Midrashot, the Batei Knesiot in Bavel, in Toronto, in Muncie, and whatnot, will also be picked up and transported to Eretz Yisrael. So this, if you'll indulge me, Agnon's greatest novel, the novel that the Nobel Committee pointed to for, you know, as his greatest achievement. It's called Oreach Natalalun, The Guest for the Night. It's a story that's based on an actual autobiographical kernel. Agnon made Aliyah in 1908 as a 19-year-old, and he basically never returns to his hometown of Buchach, which in the novel is called Shibush, you know, mixed up, ruined. But in 1930, he went back for a short visit. At that point already, his parents were dead. His siblings already moved away. It's after World War I, and he sees how degenerate the town has become. Spiritually, mentally, physically, economically, emotionally, it's really a it's a portrait of how bad things were. And this is written before the Holocaust. The book was serialized in the newspaper and then published in book form at the beginning of September 1939. Here's the headline in the newspaper on the day that the ad appears announcing publication of the book. The headline in the newspaper that day is
what's the actual date?
The actual date is
imagine would have gotten to the newspaper by that point.
September 8th.
So there was already the war had begun.
The war had begun. The headline is "Hatotachim Atzarfatiim Tokfin et Betzurei HaGermanim." French cannons attack German reinforcements. Right? In other words, there was still hope that the French were going to come and save the day. So he gets to the city and he sees that religious life has completely deteriorated. And he manages to get the key to the Beit Midrash. And he tries to rejuvenate religious life. But it only works partially. And at one point he loses the key. And he has to have a substitute made. And he knows that that substitute key is only a kind of ersatz solution, meaning he knows the whole thing is a fake. That you can't revive this moribund religious life. When he gets back to Eretz Yisrael, he finds the key. And his wife says to him, "What are you going to do? Are you going to send that key back?" He says, "Why should I send the key back? They don't use the one key," meaning the replacement key that he had made. "What do they need two for?" So he keeps the key. His wife says, "What are you thinking about doing with the key?" Said my wife, "Send it back to Shibush. The one they have is superfluous," said I. "And you tell me to burden them with a second key?" "Well," said my wife, "what will you do with it?" There came into my mouth the saying of our sages of blessed memory, "The synagogues and study halls of abroad are destined to be established in the land of Israel," meaning he quotes our Gemara. And I said to myself, "When they establish themselves in the land of Israel, this man will have the key in his possession. There's no point in sending the key back to Chutz La'aretz, because Od Ma'at, they will come and join us here." So I rose and I put the key in a box and hung the key of the box over my heart. I did not hang the key of the old Beit Midrash over my heart, for it was too heavy for my heart to bear. The early craftsmen used to make their keys too big and heavy for the measure of our hearts. The key being put away in its place, I returned to my work, and whenever I remembered it, I repeat to myself, "The synagogues and Batei Midrashot are destined," and I would open my window and look outside to see if perhaps they were making their way to establish themselves in the land of Israel. Alas, the land was desolate and silent, and the sound of the steps of the synagogues and Batei Midrashot was not heard, and still the key lies there waiting with me for that day. However, it is made of iron and brass, and it can wait, but I, who am flesh and blood, find it hard to endure.
Actually, one shul that did that. The main